Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. The escalating probability of rapidly drastic human-induced climate derangement might very well make our universal demise more likely than the hobgoblin of nuclear holocaust, which has hovered over our heads for 75 years, unless it precipitates such an impulsive annihilation. Our long, gluttonous feast on Earth's flesh is becoming indigestible. Mother is biting back. At a moment, scientists claim celestial black holes will be visible to the human eye. Humanity stares apprehensively into a black hole of its own creation. It certainly does matter how abruptly we as a species have reached this crucible. All the while we were sleepwalking, it might be said, but it matters now most of all if we have a final opportunity to reverse and possibly escape the harshest consequences of a roasting, perhaps even inflammable, home planet with no alternative planet B. We have made beloved Sol, the giver of life, our deadly enemy, its light and warmth, the blinding third-degree burn of thermocide. It is startling to be made forcibly aware that the long evolution of humanity is suddenly reaching a point of climax, that our species is indeed cause and effect for what seems historically to be the sixth major extinction of biological life on Earth, that our infinite emancipation from primeval savagery to urbane civilization has by its very own intellectual and technological progress been the method of sealing our doom. We are even able to create from words of our design names for our formidable self-proclaimed dilemma, climate change and global warming, which are essentially defined by Wikipedia on the worldwide digital internet. So far, the essential epitome of human invention. The first is overall climate change, which occurs when changes in Earth's climate system result in new weather patterns that last for at least a few decades and maybe millions of years. Global warming is a long-term rise in the average temperature of Earth's climate system, an aspect of climate change indicated by temperature measurements and by multiple effects of warming. The term commonly refers to observed and continuing rise in average air and ocean temperatures since 1900, caused mainly by emission of so-called greenhouse gases in the modern industrial economy. There are at least a dozen major human-caused factors simultaneously provoking climate change and subsequently overheating Earth's atmosphere and environment. Foremost among this yardstick is humanity's ever-expanding population, which is both source and propellant for all the rest. Like every other species that has come alive on the planet, humanity breeds compulsively, equivalent to rats in one description, and we ravage everything everywhere, including ourselves. The burning of fossil fuels saturates the upper atmosphere and tears up protective ozone that shields earthly life from lethal ultraviolet rays. The rays, screened by upper-level ozone, which is essentially an unstable form of oxygen in the upper atmosphere, are precisely those that are absorbed by DNA and cremate biological cells of plant, animal, and human. It would seem almost counterintuitive that as we more and better understand how vital sunlight is to health and psychological well-being, our industrial civilization is rapidly stripping away its beneficial attributes, aside from the worldwide mal effects of intense global warming. Prolonged exposure to the sun results in one form or another of skin cancer. Without sufficient ozone, almost any exposure to sunlight will have shattering effects to the human population. At the same time that pollution of the atmosphere shreds ozone, it increases the CO2, carbon dioxide, concentration. This increase is essentially proportional to fossil fuel combustion for electricity transmission, transportation. Visualize many hundreds of motor vehicles stuck in traffic gridlocks every day during rush hours all over the industrialized world, their motors burning gasoline and oil the entire time. And for heating and cooling, don't forget. And also the incredibly excessive manufacture of cement. It is predicted that we will very soon, in little more than a decade perhaps, reach carbon dioxide concentrations that haven't existed on Earth in the last 50 million years, when the planet was more or less a boiling cauldron, or at least punctuated with a vast orchestra of active volcanoes and deforestation. Without the remaining forests of Asia and the Americas, we bequeath our descendants an arid world, a hot greenhouse without shade to shield them from the sun's ultraviolet rays. Water systems dry up without the cooler climates of forests. Biological diversity disappears. Marine life vanishes. Oxygen itself. And so, beloved Saul, heavenly Helios, Apollo's chariot, of this world both I and soul, saith Milton, heats up our lowly planet, while at the same time the depletion of the ozone screen by Homo sapiens, otherwise known as the wise species, makes sunlight dangerous, even deadly. The weather heats up in oscillating cycles of storm and drought. Summers in particular are increasingly hot and dry. Contrarily, cyclonic and hurricane-force storms are more frequent and violent. Desertification is more common. Droughts are longer and more frequent, as are immense wildfires that also burn towns and villages, plus farmlands, orchards, and parks. The polar ice caps are melting, raising ocean levels and releasing frozen methane from Arctic seabeds. Coastal ports and cities are critically endangered. And of course, methane and oxide emissions are also being released from the soil by mining activities. Think also of huge herds of defecating cows and other livestock, as well as billowing factory smokestacks, sort of a smelly smog. Greenhouse gases magnify heat radiated back to Earth from an invisible atmospheric ceiling that is perforated by acidic chemicals released by pesticides, petroleum, and fluorocarbons in a yo-yo aspect. Defoliants and pesticides have in less than a century been absorbed in everything. And think also of aerosol propellants that eat away the ozone layer, and which began the original concern of the greenhouse effect of atmospheric deterioration. Their chlorofluorocarbon use as triggers were supposedly banned more than 40 years ago, when the ozone hole was as big as North America, but they really weren't. Humanity has built a global greenhouse and is trapped within it. Being burned up by the sun, however, is merely one of many myriad methods our genius has devised to obliterate our presence on this planet. The variety is exotic. Nuclear, chemical, or biological warfare can each and all put an abrupt end to us, of course. Yet our self-annihilation seems more likely, a long strangulation or baking from the toxic menu of pollutants we have poured into the land, sky, oceans, and rivers, which return to us as acid rain or killer smog, not to mention such other lethal byproducts as poisoned or irradiated soil, all of the above cooked on the solar stove. We have pummeled and plundered our home planet as though it offered an inexhaustible feast without charge or cleanup. but the consequences of our careless and excessive self-indulgence are converging. It is more than conceivable that any or a mixture of these swirling vexations might trigger either immediate or imminent holocaust, such as the circ thermonuclear shattering of all terrestrial life, total biocide. So what on earth are we able to do about our prospective self-inflicted dusty death, as phrased by Shakespeare? Our paradoxical paralysis stems primarily from disbelief at human eclipse so unexpectedly. At the pinnacle of enlightened civilization and the advent of truly universal experience and adventure, so to speak. Yet, as a result of the threat of extinction, our problems suddenly seem irresolvably vast and complex, and solutions nearly impossible to agree upon. Postponing answers and actions, however, leads almost always, as has been documented about bigotries, to denial and rejection. We know in our heart of hearts, and in our brains also, that we must stop abusing Mother Earth, but we find infinite rationale for continuing our mutilation. The lethal byproducts of our way of life are of less concern than our unwillingness to reverse their harm. Even possible, or even probable extinction does not seem enough of a goad to dissuade a majority opinion from pursuit of what is popularly considered to be the good life. Although there is considerable political rift in the USA about climate change, especially at the pinnacle of government power, the real critical partisan divide might be between generations. The more passively elderly, who will quit the planet soon, versus the young, who are desperate to reverse the possibility of a harrowing future while there yet remains a chance before it is too late, which it appears to be rapidly becoming. Perhaps most adult humans currently alive on Earth will most likely not experience the severe ravages of worsening climate change, perhaps consoling themselves that they will be dead before it really kicks in. Yet perceiving death as the only escape is probably not a satisfactory consolation. And the prospect of each succeeding generation being aware the world will be a more dreadful place to live in for their heirs is not much of a consolation either. If indeed we who are alive now do not seriously reverse direction and sweat blood to mitigate our present course toward the anticipated sixth extinction, the upheaval and chaos to human survival on good Mother Earth Gaia will most assuredly be immense and catastrophic. Confronted as we are with the possibility of having made Earth virtually uninhabitable for continuance of organic life, what might be the probabilities of seeking refuge off-planet? Our neighborhood solar system is not neighborly, and although scientists have relatively recently discovered the presence of planets within other solar systems in the galaxy, that is not going to be much help either. If there is a friendly human sustainable planet D out there in the near cosmos for humanity to resettle, we probably won't find it in time. Although we live in an expanding universe, human civilization appears doomed on a single planet. It is possible there might be millions, perhaps even billions, of human-compatible planet Bs throughout the universe or multiple universes, which makes a person wonder if other sentient species have prospered or imploded on home planets on which they, like us, originated, perhaps even expanded from. This, in turn, poses the irresistible question that has nagged humanity since it first realized it is a galactic species as well as a terrestrial being. Are we one of many intelligent species scattered throughout the universe, or are we the only thinking life form in all creation? We might not have the chance to know the answer. And that was something I wrote and had rewritten. And now, a poem by Margaret Buller, an Earth Day poem, Earth's Checklist. Say what you think what you say, for what would Mother Nature do if she saw her Earth this way? If she saw all the pollution, all the smog, all the waste, all the careless forest fires, all the killings just from taste, all the rainforest destruction, the acid pouring from the sky, the shooting, the logging, killing species by and by, all the deadly fertilizer being sprayed upon the ground, the oil clogging up the beaches, yet the world is going round. What would Mother Nature do? What would Mother Nature do? First, she would put a stop to the pollution, clear the acid from the sky, prevent the careless forest fires, save each species by and by, stop the rainforest destruction and the smog and the waste, halt the shooting and most logging and the killings just from taste, ban the deadly fertilizer, start to clean up the ground, make our home a better place the whole world round. But Mother Nature softly speaks. Her voice is hard to hear. Yet when she is listened to, she can be heard from far and near. And listen to her closely, for we've got some things to do. Come on, come here, and pull up a seat, for you can help on Earth Day too. Come on, go get a move on. Stop the pollution and the waste. After all, we are the future. Make our Earth a better place. And that was Earth's Checklist by Margaret Leah Bowler, who was 11 years old when she wrote it. And now, by Eugene Robinson. Ignoring climate change has not made it go away. We now know the answer to the old riddle. If a tree falls in the forest and nobody is there to hear it, the crash does make a sound. For four long years, the federal government tried to pretend that climate change was either an illusion, a natural process, or a hoax concocted for political reasons. The White House effectively ordered scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency and other departments to cover their ears and hum, na, 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 to cover up the planet's escalating distress. But now, in the reality-based Biden era, our government is once again in the business of honest and honestly reported climate research. The result is new EPA data and analyses showing that the massive impacts of human-induced warming of the atmosphere and the oceans are happening faster and in more extreme ways than when the agency was last permitted to publish climate indicators data in 2016. For those who suffer from seasonal allergies, it will come as no surprise that pollen season is also lasting longer and getting worse. The ice sheets covering much of Antarctica and Greenland were shrinking only slowly until the 2000s, when rapid melting began, the EPA reported. This melting accelerated sharply in the 2010s. While that might seem a distant phenomenon, it has measurably raised sea levels, which makes our coastal cities increasingly vulnerable to storm surge from hurricanes. The oceans are warmer now than at any time since systematic measurement began. And because warmer ocean occupies more volume than cooler water, this also raises sea levels. Every site measured has experienced an increase in coastal flooding since the 1950s, the EPA says, with the effect being most pronounced on the Atlantic and Gulf coasts. And while it is difficult to attribute any specific weather event to climate change, scientists say that ocean warming has made hurricanes generally bigger and wetter. Last year, there were so many Atlantic tropical storms and hurricanes that meteorologists ran out of names for them and had to resort to the Greek alphabet for the first time since 2005. Perhaps the most important sign that the White House has taken a new approach to these worrisome indicators is that the EPA is able to make this simple declarative statement. Quote, the Earth's climate is changing. Temperatures are rising. Snow and rainfall patterns are shifting, and more extreme climate events, like heavy rainstorms and record high temperatures, are already happening. Many of these observed changes are linked to the rising levels of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in our atmosphere caused by human activities. Unquote. It's those last four words, caused by human activities, that the previous administration tried its best to squelch, pretending there was some sort of debate about what almost all climate scientists regard as a long-settled question. As the EPA climate website notes, for the past 800,000 years, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere oscillated between roughly 180 and 280 parts per million until the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Over the past 250 years, a blink of an eye in the history of the planet, the carbon dioxide concentration leaked to 411 parts per million in 2019, an incredible increase. Atmospheric carbon traps heat, as do methane and several other industrial gases. We are baking ourselves. Before you can even begin to solve a problem, you have to acknowledge its existence and its cause. The United States government is no longer enforcing a policy of willful ignorance, and that is a beginning. It will not be easy to persuade China, by far the world's biggest carbon dioxide emitter, to cut back its use of coal and other fossil fuels quickly enough. It will not be easy to persuade India to follow a clean energy plan to development rather than use the perhaps quicker and definitely dirtier route taken by rich countries. And it will not be easy to wean the U.S. economy from coal, oil, and natural gas, even though the potential economic benefits of the change are becoming increasingly clear. But under President Biden, we will try. And we will proceed with our eyes and ears open for a change. And that was Eugene Robinson. Ignoring climate change hasn't made it go away. And he wrote this in the Washington Post, of which he has been a major writer for many, many years. And now, we need an infrastructure package for nature. By Paul Greenberg and Carl Safina. We were driving through Long Island's sprawling road system in a borrowed electric car when we heard the news about President Biden's proposed $2 trillion infrastructure package. All around us, the bric-a-brac of a fast vanishing age littered the landscape. Gas stations, dead malls, extra lanes now emptied of shoppers and commuters. The thing is, nature has its own infrastructure. What nature needs is for us to get out of its way and let its systems function in the manner that billions of years of evolution enabled them to do. It would be more than a shame, moreover, if Mr. Biden's infrastructure planning does not make that connection. We need a different kind of infrastructure entirely, one that accommodates the natural world and puts the long-term needs of ecosystems before the knee-jerk urges of all of us so eager to get back to life as we knew it. So with an eye toward that, here are a few things we wish the president would consider as we move ahead. Precautionary road building. More than 4 million miles of roads and highways lace the nation. In the lower 48, the farthest one can get from a road is about 20 miles. All that infrastructure kills an estimated 1 million vertebrate animals every day. So before we rush out to fix our crumbling roads, perhaps we should let a lot of them crumble. Let's favor only those roads that carry significant amounts of public bus transportation or are essential links to getting workers to and from their places of employment. using the already built environment before destroying the natural one. We have already mowed down a lot of nature to make room for our assorted stuff. In our exuberance to build more green things, we need to focus on updating what we've already damaged. That dead mall could be a solar field. It already has the power hookups. That agglomeration of gas pumps could be a park and ride charging station for commuters traveling farther by train. We must instantly stop cutting down forests to put in vast arrays of solar panels so the utility monopolies can maintain their grasp. A forward-looking plan must heal what is broken before breaking more ground. Transportation, yes, but with wildlife corridors. Let's broaden public transportation. As others have suggested, we should vastly expand bus service and link the dispiriting fragments of short and long distance travel needs of millions of Americans. As we knit together our splintered transportation networks, let's take care not to further fragment the increasingly interrupted ranges of migratory mammals, birds, reptiles, and amphibians. Let's use some of those billions of dollars targeted for rail and road to build wildlife over and under passes and sheathe public buildings in bird-safe glass. A lot is already possible. An Abundant Species Act. The Endangered Species Act sets a floor to protect at-risk plants and animals rather than a goal for them to flourish. Contrastingly, the Clean Water Act is aspirational. It set out to improve U.S. waters with the mandate of making them fishable and swimmable. Since passage of the Endangered Species Act, extinctions have indeed been slowed, but wild bird populations have declined by a third overall in the past half century, and the numbers of insects that pollinate our crops are plummeting. As pressures on wildlife rise, we need an Abundant Species Act whose goal is ensuring that wildlife on the land and in the waters and skies are as visible as roads, rails, or wind turbines. Which brings us back to our initial premise. The infrastructure of America, the guts, if you will, is a certain wildness that is essential to who we are. Without those guts, a new American infrastructure will be an empty package. And that was We Need an Infrastructure Package for Nature by Paul Greenberg and Carl Safina. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk engineers this program. Piano intro by Keith Jarrett.